It's not many times that a guest has their own song. The Brian song. It's a great Monty Python song there.
No cookies for him next year.
And it leads us into our segment with Brian Zinchuk, editor, owner of PipelineOnline.ca, Saskatchewan's Energy News. Brian joining me in studio. Thanks for being here today.
Good morning.
We were just chatting on the open lines. We were talking about driving behaviors and people that don't know how to merge. What do you think about that? Are people adept at zipper merges, or is it a complete cluster?
Cluster.
Yeah. And they're probably, I'm guessing in Estevan, you got zipper merges happening when there's construction going on, for sure.
Let's just say traffic in Estevan is never really an issue. I mean, what we do have is trains, because one of CP's main lines runs right through Estevan, and we get dozens and dozens of trains.
Sure.
So if you're late for anything, even if you're not late, or if you have a reason, you just say train, and everyone's like, got it.
Have an extra cup of coffee while you wait. Yeah. Brian Zinchuk is my guest this morning. Always look forward to our conversations. Like it when you're able to come into studio like this, because we've got a lot to talk about this morning. Energy, oil, gas, a number of things. And as we like to do, especially when we've got you in studio, is we will later on open up the lines if people have questions for you. So you can text those in anytime at 1-877-332-8255. So we usually start these chats with oil prices, and that's usually a good springboard into what's going on in the world. Where are things at today?
Yeah, so as oil prices are the leading indicator for everything, and it really does get into the stories we're talking about. So because the U.S. government shut down a few hours ago, because that's what Americans do, oil prices are all depressed. So West Texas Intermediate this morning was $61.77. Western Canadian Select was $50.02, which is a $11.75 differential. And Brent, which is the international market for basically tanker-based oil, is $65.64. So these are low prices, generally speaking. I was talking to someone just the other day, explained to me that, you know, $65, which is where we've been, 62 to 65 for the last several weeks, is really more like $55 from 10 years ago. These aren't great oil prices. And what that ties into is, you know, what happened yesterday, the big news that came out of ExxonMobil, which is a majority owner of Imperial Oil. ExxonMobil announced 2,000 layoffs across the world, of which 900 are from their subsidiary, Imperial Oil, based in Calgary. A good chunk of the Calgary office is getting laid off.
I heard, correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard that they have 1,500 employees there and close to 1,000 are losing their job.
Yeah, I don't know exactly about that. I didn't get a chance to dig deeply into it. I do know that it's about 900, and it's not going to be immediately. I think it was up to 2027.
Right.
So it's going to be a gradual thing. And some of the jobs I read this morning are going to be relocated to Edmonton Strathcona Refinery. But, you know, Heather Exner-Perot, who I've talked to on occasion, she's an energy expert. You know, she says this is part of a larger trend, and it has to do with, you know, lower oil prices. And so companies are cutting back. They're not the first.
But have we seen this happen, Brian? I mean, you've been in this industry for a long time. So we've seen depressed oil prices before.
Well, I mean, was it Cenovus or Husky? I can't remember who it was a few years ago. They laid off a few hundred people. You know, similar sort of circumstances. So, I mean, this is part of the nature of the beast. The oil industry, you know, when things are up, they hire. And when things go down, they cut back. And sometimes they cut back pretty hard. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. The next thing on the prices here is really interesting what's happening with the AECO natural gas price. That's the Canadian natural gas hub in Alberta. And for most of last week, prices were negative, as in producers who are producing gas, which is a valuable fuel, which has an intrinsic value, were actually having to pay people to take it away because the market had been flooded with commodity. Now, why is this?
What type of commodity? Like, what are
natural
we talking?
Gas. Okay. Natural gas that comes out of your fireplace or out of your stove or your furnace. The price for almost all of last week was negative. Now, there's a few things with this. Some are saying that companies were gearing up for the LNG Canada to be fully on stream, and it hasn't been as fast taking that product as possible. And they may have overestimated it and create a bit of a glut. But I have another thing here that I've thought of, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it's a possibility. So one of the biggest consumers in Alberta for natural gas, because right now no one's using their furnace, is gas power plants, which is when there's no wind, it's 95% of the grid. Well, there was a lot of wind last week to the point where for several days, anywhere from up to 16 hours a day, the price for power in Alberta was zero, because whenever there's a surplus of wind, the price of power on the open market that Alberta is goes to zero, which means no one gets paid. So if you have, not much gas being used because the wind is supplanting it, I believe that the wind surplus had an impact on the gas consumption and power consumption, which then had an impact on the gas price. I haven't heard anyone else talking about that, but I don't know if anyone else has been putting those two and two together. But I see the fact that the negative pricing overlays almost exactly with the days where power pricing was hitting zero for hours and hours at a time. I think there's a correlation.
You know, there's not a month that I have you on the show. Brian Zinchuk is our guest, editor and owner of PipelineOnline.ca, where we talk about gas prices, oil prices, and we get texts then from people saying, how does this correlate to what we see with gas prices? So when you're talking about the oil prices, and I know we've talked about that before, but again this morning we're getting a text on the text line saying, you know, when oil prices go down, why don't we see some sort of corresponding move with gas prices?
There often is a bit. The reality is that refiners want to make money too. So if they have lower commodities, then, you know, they will make a little bit more money. I don't write about a lot about what they call the downstream, which is once the oil is processed and goes down to you putting it in the gas tank. So, I mean, I can't speak of too much authority on that, and being flatly honest on that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, you know, there is some correlation, but not as much. I mean, like 15 years ago, for instance, the price of gasoline almost exactly matched the price of oil. So when oil was $100 a barrel, gasoline was a dollar around that time. When oil dropped to $70 a barrel, gasoline dropped to 70 cents. There was a very strong correlation. And by the way, at the same time, the Canadian dollar also exactly matched what the price of oil was with digits. We haven't seen that so much in recent years. The carbon tax was an influence. It's been taken off. So we saw about a 15 cent drop in that, but things are staying the same. And I mean, let's face it, the gas stations and refiners still want to make money as well.
Mm-hmm. Brian Zinchuk is my guest. We can, though, talk about the wide suite of things that can impact oil prices. Because just as you said this morning, I mean, U.S. government shuts down, given they're having a bit of a spat between the Republicans and the Democrats. So everything's stalled out. It affects gas prices.
Well, what's one of the biggest purchasers of fuel in the world? Right. The U.S. military. Well, the U.S. military, I don't think they're writing checks when a government shuts down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has. It absolutely is having an impact. Okay, let's keep talking about, usually we like to jump into rig counts, and I know those have also been depressed over the last little while. It seems like the last 2 or 3 months you've come in, they haven't really...
Yeah, they're really not great. I mean, last year we were seeing more around 39. Now we're seeing 34 being pretty much standard. I was actually out in Swift Current last week. Some family business to attend, so I went for a drive around there. One of the things I've expressed concern about before is I'm really concerned about the lack of activity in the southwest Saskatchewan. Swift Current used to have a booming oil patch. They used to drill 2,000 natural gas wells in that region 20 years ago, a year. Now you have to really look hard to even see any activity as well. I drove through most of the oil fields west of Swift Current, which I've never had the opportunity before, the Fosterton, the Cantor. I didn't see one service rig working. I did see one drilling rig, one singular rig drilling for oil just west of there, just west of the Chinook Power Station. I actually stood and I posted a video on Facebook, which I'm probably going to have as my lead story tomorrow, talking about this. The reality is you have to have a critical mass to maintain certain services for the oil field services. I'm definitely afraid we're losing that in southwest Saskatchewan if we haven't lost it already. If you don't have a certain amount of activity to keep the other businesses going, they just disappear, and then you have to bring them in from Medicine Hat or Kindersley or whatever. Mm-hmm. As for the rig count, it was 64 across Saskatchewan, 10 in northwest Saskatchewan, which actually was pretty good activity. West Central was 7. Southwest, I mentioned, was 2, one for oil, one for helium. One rig is drilling south of Mankota for helium for North American. And Southeast Saskatchewan was 15 rigs, one for potash. The potash ones, sometimes they show up in these counts, sometimes they don't. You know, there's often potash drilling going continually, but they don't always show up on here. So it's kind of a, you know, bit of a spoiler on that. And I guess we can get into the Grey Cup part after the break.
Yeah, well, let's take a break because I've also got a text. We were talking about Imperial Oil's planned layoffs, which many people, including the federal government, Alberta's premier, disappointed to hear this. I've got a text on the line wanting to know your opinion if that has to do with profits or does it have to do with them being frustrated with Canadian federal government policies when it comes to oil. So we'll get your thoughts on that. Brian Zinchuk, my guest, will continue on after the break here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on a Wednesday morning. It's the first Wednesday of October, October 1st today. Flip your calendar if you haven't. And we know a few things happen on that first Wednesday of the month. Might be garbage day for some, but it's Brian Zinchuk day for me. Brian Zinchuk always joins us on the first Wednesday. We can talk energy, oil, gas. And I can tell you, Brian, you know, through the last couple of years, having you on the program, this is probably the one area where I have grown the most in terms of a strong appreciation for this industry.
I'll just wait till I drag you out for one of my tours.
Well, I've done a bit of touring down. It was the coal mine that I got down to, down the Westmoreland mine down around Estevan. But yeah, I'd like to get out on a tour. But I just think the ability that, that we have, the obligation we have to understand whether it's flipping a light switch, pumping gas into your vehicle, whatever. We have an obligation to understand the work that goes into that, the importance that it plays in the world. And I'll never forget the first time I had you on the show. You literally looked around. You said, there's oil in your pen. There's oil in that coffee mug. I remember you talking about that. And if you do trace back, whether it's production, industry, agriculture, whatever, I mean, oil and gas plays a prominent role, and I think that's where you were going.
Well, it's a huge thing for Saskatchewan as well. We are the second largest producer in Canada, but we often don't realize how big we are, even by ourselves. We're producing the same as some smaller OPEC producers. Like, we are a significant player. So one of the things that came up when Prime Minister Carney announced his big projects list,
right,
and he talked about the next tranche would be before the Grey Cup. And, you know, a question I have is, with Grey Cup coming up, which has a better chance, Saskatchewan winning or West Coast Pipeline being announced?
Well, I want to see both, Brian.
I'm sure everyone out here would, yes.
But I'm going to say probably a better chance of the Riders winning the Grey Cup than...
Well, you know, I mean, and that's the thing, is that all the, you know, the major players, both in Saskatchewan and in Alberta, they're giving Carney more of a chance than I would have expected. I mean, they were done with Trudeau, absolutely sure. Done. But they are, you know, they're holding out hope that something's going to come of this. And, you know, the idea of a West Coast pipeline, most likely to Prince Rupert, and Northern Gateway was planned to Kitimat, so this would be a bit of a change. Mm-hmm. But most of that right away would already be there. The reality is that would be a big game changer. I mean, that would add the capacity for Canada to increase production by about 1 million barrels per day. Mm-hmm. We're producing about 5 million barrels per day right now. I think 4.5 for Alberta and 500,000 for us, give or take, or 430, I think, last I checked. But the reality is that, you know, that allows, you know, expansion and growth. And then companies like Imperial Oil don't necessarily have to lay off because they'll be in growth mode instead of, you know, dealing with these. They said this was a restructuring. That was their excuse, I guess you could say, their reason for laying off 900 people. If we have the capacity to grow 1 million barrels, you're not going to be laying off 900 people.
Well, so the question that I saw on the text line, and we kind of hinted at it before, is, you know, this layoff that we see from Imperial Oil announced yesterday happening by 2027, so it's still about a year and a half away. Is it because there's a depression in the market and oil prices are down, or is it because Canada is not seen as a healthy environment for investment in energy?
Well, the first one for sure, that is, you know, because prices are down.
Yeah.
I mean, that is absolutely an impact. The second part, you know, that's more of a political question. But, you know, if we had that pipeline approved and in construction starting, and here's a big thing, you know, the premier of BC, Eby, you know, he says, look, there is no proponent, there is no project, there is no pipeline. And he's not wrong. Now, that doesn't mean that Enbridge might be working on a plan behind scene, closed doors or, you know, behind the curtain. I expect that they probably started working on that as soon as Carney got in and started making some positive noises. But until that happens, until that announcement's made, you know, we really just don't know. I mean, when I walked in here, as I said, it kind of feels like a dam waiting to burst, you know, a log jam of, or an ice flow.
Right.
You know, and if when it does, then, you know, things are going to be like, look out.
Right. So let me ask you, and I might have asked you this last month, but even if I did, I'm going to ask you again. Let's say I've got in my hand here the what they call the 32 potential infrastructure projects, right? We saw five released already. The rest come out around Grey Cup, or five more, then some more around Super Bowl. He's timing them with big sporting events or big football games.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But are we going to have good forward momentum in energy production in this country if the infrastructure projects go ahead, but the regulatory system doesn't change?
Probably not. I mean, the reality is that if it's going to take, you know, oodles of years to get a major oil sands project approved, and, you know, which projects are there right now? I mean, they've all been incremental growth, but, you know, it wasn't that long ago that Tech Frontier, which is now totally out of oil, wanted to build a $20 billion oil sands project of 250,000 barrels. Mm-hmm. And they walked away from it because of exactly what you're saying. The regulatory thing kept moving the goalposts, and they said, we're done. Mm-hmm. And not only are they done from, you know, even the idea, they're totally out of oil now.
Right. Okay. We throw it out on the text line, and I love this because, you know, I mean, I like the texts that come in from listeners because many of them either are in the industry or just very curious and want to hear from you, the expert on this. How about this question? Clinton Lumsden. Hey, I was just wondering if you could ask Brian Evan for me. The TV show Landman, is it accurate how they portray oil business?
Well, that's like asking my wife if the Pit or if ER is accurate.
Your wife's a nurse.
She's an ER nurse.
Yeah.
You know, ER was not so accurate. The Pit, pretty actually close to reality. You know, Landman, of course, they have to dramatize stuff. I mean, you know, his poor son Cooper gets, you know, he falls on a rig. He almost gets blown up, everything in the same week. Yeah, they're dramatizing it. But a lot of these things are actually pretty accurate. I mean, they can happen.
Okay, we're going to get to more texts that have come in. We've got a number of them that have come in for Brian, and I want to talk about a number of other things as well with Brian Zinchuk, our guest, right up until 11 o'clock this morning. Brian, the editor and owner of PipelineOnline.ca. We'll be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back to the show. Evan Gray joined in studio today by Brian Zinchuk, Saskatchewan's energy news editor and owner, Pipeline Online. You can find them at pipelineonline.ca. Brian, lots of texts coming in, so I want to jump to a couple of these
let's go
if we can. Darlene says, if Prime Minister Carney was to announce the development of the Port of Churchill, would that increase the oil and gas industry or help the industry in Saskatchewan?
If they build a pipeline to it, because I don't think they'd do crude by rail to that port. And that would also require numerous major icebreakers to be built. We currently have two that have just started under construction, but we'd probably need four at least, because you have up to 8 months of ice. Mm-hmm. So that would be a major consideration. You know, Premier Moe, I asked him about it. He's kind of like, look, I'll support any pipeline as long as we get it. But you know, his focus is more on the West Coast.
We were talking earlier about the announcement Imperial Oil made this week about major layoffs, 20% actually of its workforce down by 2027. I got a text from Tim in Prince Albert wanting to know your thoughts. Is it true that the big players, Exxon, BP, et cetera, are moving operations to places like Brazil or Argentina?
Well, there is you know, more activity happening in South America in the last couple of years than I've seen in my entire career. I mean, South America is definitely opening up. I can't speak to whether companies are shifting stuff there, but there's definitely potential, especially in Argentina. I don't know about Brazil, but I mean, Brazil's done a lot of stuff offshore with Petrobras. They discovered something called the subsalt, which is this layer of salt under the ocean floor. And then below that, they found a lot of oil. It's very difficult to find, though, because you can't really do the seismic stuff because salt kind of stops the sound waves. That's very technical. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's definitely more interest in South America. And you know, Guyana went from zero to hero like in a couple of years. They're now becoming a major oil producer.
I always get a kick out of our friend Cal from Oxbow. He joins the conversation almost every day. He doesn't have a question. He has a statement, but I'll make his statement and then you can react to it. He says, TC Energy is not waiting on Carney and his ideological insanity. Being in the energy business in Canada is like walking with an anvil around your neck.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. You know, the thing is that both TC Energy and Enbridge over the last 15 years have really gone heavy into the United States. They've bought major pipelines and become, you know, the two major players in the pipeline industry for North America, not just Canada, but for North America. And they have been saying repeatedly, look, if if Canada is not a healthy place to do, we will invest money, just not here. We'll spend it south. And they are.
Okay, I want to get one more text here before we kind of get back into our agenda, but this one kind of in line with something I wanted to chat with you about. Brent in Prince Albert, what does Brian think about the nuclear power option for Saskatchewan? And if it's on the horizon, when would you like to see it operational?
Well, I will be writing likely more about nuclear over the next several years than all the other media combined, specifically because the first reactors planned will either be built 6 miles or 20 miles from my house, either at Boundary Dam or at Rafferty Dam. Mm-hmm. So the reality is that Estevan, if we do nuclear, it will be the hub. And it's going to be at least two reactors and possibly more than that. We're talking many, many billions of dollars. The two reactors that they're planning right now, and it could be more. Ontario's building four of them right now, and the total cost is $20.9 billion. And that's the biggest problem, is that if we are to do it, the technology's there. You know, this is not rocket science. We've been doing this for 70 years now. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is going to be the cost. Can we afford it? As for timelines, SaskPower says right now they won't make a final decision until 2029. I would love to see that sooner. I don't understand how it takes a better part of a decade to just decide to do something like this, never mind doing it. It's like reinventing the wheel every single time. I would love to see the timeline horizons for approvals and licensings dropped by 2/3.
This must have been a topic of discussion at, you were recently at a conference, were you not? The Southeast Tech Hub?
Yeah, so I want to give some props here to Gord Moore from Estevan. He moved to Estevan a few years ago, became a bit of a force of nature, and he set up the Southeast Tech Hub, which hosted its third conference called the ICE Rural Conference. I'm not sure what ICE stands for, something about economic development. But anyhow, it was all about really high-tech stuff about and possibilities for Southeast Saskatchewan, particularly Estevan. So they had the country lead, the vice president responsible for GE Verona Hitachi nuclear reactors. That's the ones that are being built in Ontario, the ones that Saskatchewan's chosen. They had her and the executive vice president for SaskPower on stage talking about this. They had representatives from Enbridge talking about the Weyburn Wind project.
Can you just stop on the nuclear? Did they give timelines? It's exactly
what I'm saying. The soonest SaskPower would have its first reactor online would be in 2034, and that would still be the commissioning phase, probably 2034, 35.
We're a decade away.
Yeah, we are a decade away. And, you know, it's going to take, I think, 42 months is the construction timeline. And then you have commissioning, which is, you know, not a week when it comes to, you know, nuclear. I mean, it takes a while to get these things up and going. So the reality is, and this is why I've been writing so much about coal, is that if we were to follow current federal coal regulations, we'd have to shut down about 1,500 megawatts of coal on 2030, and we won't have any nuclear until 2035. And on a cold winter day, coal is up to 44% of our power. So how do we keep the lights on in the intervening years? And that's for one reactor. To replace our coal fleet, we would need five. So that's a
pricey. Yeah.
That's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. And we need to get there. So what the province has said is that we are going to keep coal as a bridge to nuclear. And eventually we're going to get nuclear. It may take longer than we might thought, but we're going to get there at some point.
Well, and when we had the minister on the program, I asked him about, you know, he said it just doesn't make sense to invest in infrastructure for LNG, for example, like for natural gas in this province when it's a transition phase of maybe 5 to 10 years. Might as well stick with coal. We've already got things in place. That was part of the methodology.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to the minister very frequently about this sort of stuff. And, you know, it may be 5 to 10 years, but being that nuclear seems to never, ever be on time anywhere it's built, that 5 or 10 years could end up being 10 or 15 years.
At that conference, you were chatting with me a bit off air about that conference, and you said there was lots of discussion about coal and the step towards graphite.
Yeah, so props here to former SFAN Mayor Roy Ludwig and current SFAN Mayor and former Councillor Tony Cernick. You know, in the panic to try to save the mine, they started working on a coal to graphite project. And I haven't really written about it. I will have a story coming up soon about it. Cause I honestly, I dismissed it. I didn't really think much of it, but after seeing the presentation, I'm not so dismissive anymore. The idea is that when we talk about lithium ion batteries, lithium is, I think it's the cathode part of the battery, but graphite is the anode, and we need a lot of graphite, and we don't have a lot being produced in North America. And if everyone's going to be doing batteries for anything from your Apple Watch to your cell phone to your car, we need graphite. And I think it's the University of Washington that they've been working with a professor to analyze the lignite coal from Estevan. It turns out, yeah, there may be potential to turn that lignite into graphite. And I kind of thought, well, it wouldn't be that much. The numbers they talked about at this conference would be pretty much equal to the current production of that mine, which means if we keep burning coal, we would actually almost have to double production of the mine as long as coal is being used for power as well as graphite, if it's to go ahead. The timelines is, and I was concerned that they wouldn't have it in place before the 2030 deadline. But if the 2030 deadline doesn't matter, well, now if it, maybe this thing starts in 2032 or something like that.
Right.
You know, we have time to breathe. And if this does happen, then we could have, within 60 miles of Estevan, we could have lithium being produced from the Stoughton area and from the Torquay area, from Arizona Lithium changed its name back to Prairie Lithium, from EMP Metals, which is working at Stoughton. So we have lithium produced there. We could have possibly graphite produced there. We could have a battery metals hub in southeast Saskatchewan, totally new industry.
And then, you know, I think the value add conversation starts to happen is, you know, one thing to have these raw materials, but is there an appetite to actually put them into advance their use and value add those products?
Well, I mean, and, you know, we always want to do that because we don't want to be hewers of wood and, you know, gather, or, you know what I mean? The reality is that do we have the industrial capacity to make those factories here and the people and everything else? I don't know. I mean, Ontario's making a huge bid on that. They've thrown billions and billions and billions towards battery plants.
Right.
I mean, maybe we supply them. Maybe we build them here. I don't know. But I don't know where we'd get a couple, you know, 1,000 people or so to run these plants.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. Brian Zinchuk is my guest from pipelineonline.ca. We'll take the break and come back. I want to get into, you wrote a story on multilateral drilling and the impact that it's having. You said potentially one of the most important pieces you've written in the last little while.
Absolutely.
I want to get your thoughts on that, why that's important, and maybe even some of the feedback you got from your article. When we come back, you're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. I think Frank just picks songs that he wants to see Brian dance to. Brian Zinchuk joining me in studio. You're hyped up about that song.
That's a good one.
Editor, owner of Pipeline Online, which is Saskatchewan's energy news. I got another text I wanted to get to. Dave in Saskatoon said, I have land down by Milestone with mineral rights. There's some wells down in that area. How do I go about seeing if anyone is interested in drilling on my land?
Honestly, your best bet is to talk to some local Weyburn-based oil producers because they have a lot of production around that area. So, for instance, you could talk to Valley View Petroleums. You could talk to Caprice Resources or Alden Oils. All three are based in Weyburn, all three very long-established Weyburn family-owned businesses. So you can actually talk to the owners face-to-face in some of these cases. Alden, which is the bigger one of those, has a side business called, I think it's called Brownstone Royalty, which is there. That is what precisely what they do is, you know, buy royalty rights for stuff like that and develop these sort of things. So, you know, you could talk to a local person. You can talk to people who are actually, you know, real human beings as opposed to, you know, some nameless corporation. Who do I talk to? That would be my best bet. And I honestly, I've worked with all three of them. I would recommend any of them.
Okay. Good stuff. Thanks for the text, Dave. We appreciate it. Okay. I wanted to get to the story you wrote. I read your story that you wrote, with multilateral drilling. You even yourself referred to it as maybe one of the most important and biggest stories you've written in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it really is important. And, you know, this story kind of, in fact, grew out of our conversations talking about multilaterals over the last several months.
Right.
And the reality is that this is the biggest technological change we have seen since I've started reporting on this 17 years ago. It is the next big thing. And what it means is that companies can now produce, roughly equivalent volumes of oil and have access to roughly equivalent amounts of land underground with one well as opposed to 4 or 8 or 10 or 23.
And just for a reminder for people that maybe didn't catch the show where we talked about it, can you give me the 30-second elevator speech on multilateral drilling?
Yeah, so what it is that you go down, you drill one well down into the ground, and then once you get close to the formation, that which is like a flat pancake, you know, perhaps a mile deep in the Stoughton area, that you want to go into, you drill one long well, and then you come back and you drill multiple, it looks like spaghetti or a pitchfork, where you're going out and you're drilling these long things, and they can now do 2 miles. And there's one company now says they're going to do 2.5 miles, and some areas of North America are doing 3 miles for these things. So what that means is that, for instance, and I used in a story, and if you just scroll down a little bit, you'll see it on the webpage. I used a Google Earth image from Stoughton, an area that was developed about 18 years ago. Heavily drilled, had 23 well pads. Each of those having two wells, one going across the road, one going inside the road, but 23 wells basically in a two sections of land, 8 quarters of land. You can now essentially replace all of that with one single individual well.
Wow.
And what that means is enormous efficiencies for the oil companies, but they're the big winners in this for the drillers, because it takes instead of a week or 4 or 5 days to drill a well, they get 30 days up to 42 days for some of these wells. So they win. And this is after a decade of losing because they worked themselves out of a job. But the big thing is that for all the other services that are related to drilling,
that's oil field services. I'm talking.
So, I mean, the dirt movers who build the lease, the surveyors who come out, who actually one of them contacted me about this, and a dirt mover contacted me, the truckers, one of those contacted me, the service rigs who do the completions, the cementers, the casing, the people who haul the casing, people who run the casing. I mean, there's a whole litany in it. I list them in the story. A lot for the last 15 years, Southeast Saskatchewan's been based on for every active drilling rig, they'd roughly drill one well per week, which means 4 times a month, each of these services will go to work. Now we're looking at each of these services going to work once a month or even longer. And the reality is that we're looking at, depending on which metric you look at, anywhere from a 4-to-1 contraction to up to an 8-to-1 and potentially up to a 12-to-1 contraction for the need for some of these services compared to 15 years ago. Now, this has been generally gradual in that drilling rigs have become much more efficient in the last 10 years. But this is a step change in the industry, and the impact on the services is brutal. I mean, since I wrote this story, I got one text saying, Brian, your story was nauseating, but truthful. I spent an hour texting a company owner who runs a trucking company. I spent another half hour texting back and forth with a land surveyor, you know, and they're all telling me, Brian, you're 100% on the money with this. You know, we are really feeling it. So, you know, the reality is the thing we're talking about, Imperial Oil, those are mostly corporate jobs. We don't have a lot of corporate jobs in Saskatchewan. Most of the jobs in Saskatchewan Oil Patch are operational people, the service companies working for the oil companies in the field.
Right. Okay. I want to jump in where we literally don't even have a full minute left, but CIMSA has a big conference.
Yeah, CIMSA has its Energy Suppliers Forum at the Delta in Regina here next Wednesday.
Yeah.
It is one of the premier events to attend. I attend it every year. I'll be at it. The cost has gone up, but if you want to register, go to CIMSA.SIMSA.ca.
Good stuff, Brian. Always appreciate you coming by. Thanks so much for popping by the studio again.
Flew by again.
You bet. It always does. Brian Zinchuk, who we like to bring in. We've kind of earmarked the first Wednesday of every month to bring Brian in and talk all things energy. And, of course, you can check out all of his information and reporting on pipelineonline.ca. Okay, we'll take a break, and we are at 11 o'clock on Wednesday, which means Saskatchewan's smartest radio listener. Is it you? Well, we'll find out. The question is ready to be asked when we come back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.